And then I'll can everybody hear me? Great. And then I'm going to share my screen right here. Okay, so what I want to cover today is a question that we've touched on every now and then in our discussion of hesychoria, but I want to focus on it exclusively today. And that is, to what extent are we thinking of hesychoria and the obligation to build a wall as a reflection of true hesych, right? Preventing a true wrongdoing, preventing a real tort. If you are mazik, somebody with hesychoria, then you're considered to be a mazik. You're considered to have violated his right. You're considered to have wronged him in some meaningful way. Or do we think of the provisions of hesychoria as something much weaker than that? Namely, something akin to a zoning law. You could see here, I just wrote out a little bit on the source sheet. It's more, you could think of hesychoria more as a public goods problem, which is how do you get the joint members of a community to share the cost of a good that benefits all of them, right? It makes the community overall more valuable. It makes everyone's properties more aesthetically pleasing overall, right? So it's a valuable commodity for the entire community. How do you get everybody to chip in and to pay for this? So you can see here, it's not really about preventing a rights violation or about preventing people from suffering harms, but it's like the example I give here, it's like the rule in Yerushalayim that all buildings have to be made out of Yerushalmi stone, right? Because it makes the community overall look nicer and more valuable, right? So maybe hesychoria is something like that. It just it makes the value of all properties go up if everybody also has this additional benefit of privacy, et cetera, et cetera. Does everybody see the difference between those, or between the hezek idea and this, let's just call this hilchos shchenim, literally like a communal zoning law, communal good type of benefit that we're just trying to impose on the parties? Everybody good with the chakira itself? Yeah? Okay, good. Josh, you with us there? We don't see your face. Let's see if we get Josh hurt.
Yeah, I'm on. I'll have my camera on in a minute.
All right.
Thanks.
We don't want to know what's going on over there. It's
yeah, better not to.
Okay.
Every hits now.
Every hits now. So I want to walk through today several halachos that appear to take a stand on this question, or at least the way Achronim interpret the halachos suggests that the machlokas about a given halacha turns on this question about the nature of the hesychoria and the chiyuv to build a wall. So the first example comes from what the Gemara talks about in Daf Vav as a chiyuv to build a wall 10 tfachim high. Anybody want to tell us the main idea there? What's going on about this kosel of yud tfachim rather than the kosel of dalet amos? Anybody remember what's going on there on Daf Vav?
Isn't it to prevent people from entering? It's not really to prevent hesychoria, but it's to prevent people from like trespassing or from doing damage like by like trotting onto the field or something.
Exactly. Yeah, the Gemara talks about adjoining properties, and under certain conditions, there's no chiyuv to build a dalet amos wall. All there is a chiyuv to build a mesipas, a smaller wall of 10 tefachim. And the Gemara says that this is l'nitfas olav kiganav. What's that mean, Daniel? L'nitfas olav kiganav?
Sorry, that's the bell. L'nitfas olav kiganav, because he'll be considered like a ganav, I guess. He'll be captured. I don't know. I guess it's considered to be like stealing if he was to enter.
Yeah, or to say a little more, the way Rashi explains it, you know, without that wall dividing the properties, you could always have an excuse, right? Oh, like the ball that I was playing with just rolled into your backyard, right? And that's why I'm here, right? So like, it's very easy to have an excuse as to why you're invading or trespassing into his property, right, Daniel? But if there's a wall there that blocks, you know, normal things from just falling into his property or from your accidentally stepping foot in there, Right? We know that if you trespass over that boundary, you have bad intentions, right? Like there's an intentional act of geneva or something like that. So what's pretty clear over here is that this is not about hezek, right? Nobody thinks that your neighbor suffers harm from your walking over his property every now and then. It's more to give a property owner the ability to catch somebody for trespassing, right? So to take away this excuse that, oh, I just happened to have stumbled into your property, right? So this arguably is not true. It's not that there's any wrong being done when he just walks and steps foot into your property, but the idea is that it makes property use overall more secure when the boundaries are clearly defined and people could nab somebody for wrongfully entering. Does everybody see that? Right. So it's almost like putting up an alarm system or just a fence that gives you more secure property rights. Right? It shores up the kind of security that you have in your own property. Everybody see that? Okay, good. Now this is not about hezek riyah at all. And this is Gemara's case about a gaga samachle chatzah chaveiro. The Rambam, as we saw earlier, the Rambam paskins this halacha and applies it also to a gina. That a gina just requires a mechitza of 10 tfachim. Remember, the Chachmi Lonil were very upset about this. The Raivid was upset about this. They all thought that a gina should require a kosel of 4 amos. So the way some achronim explained the Rambam's view about gina, again, not a chatzer, and the Aben Azel is a good example of this, he says that the gina wall is just for this idea of nitfas alav kiganav, right, to shore up your property claim. It's not mishum hezek ri'iya, okay? And he says explicitly, it's lo mitoras mazik, it's not based off a theory of harming somebody, but more based off like the theory of a public good. Remember, kofenos olasos beishar v'delos v'chatzer, he calls this mishum hischaivos hashotrin. Just the kind of like obligation that should be borne jointly by a community, by members of a common property. Does everybody see that? So this idea of mechitzas asara l'nitfas alav kiganav and the Rambam's extension to kosel yud is just a nice example of a non-hezek-based zoning law requirement. Zachariah, you have a hand on this?
Yeah, it's a bit tangential, but kind of maybe more like as a methodological question. Like the Rambam himself explains why he thinks this needs hentah. He says, oh, because it's ayin hara, and that's a Mormon thing, in the tshuva. And the Eben Azel is kind of like, you know, projecting this more fundamental theory onto this.
Yeah, that's
pretty. Yeah, so like when the Rambam himself has explained himself, do we just say, okay, fine, like the Platonic Rambam, however, would have said this conceptual idea and this is what the Aben Azel is going, like what's the, how do we
approach the methodological issue here? Yeah, that's a pretty interesting point. I'm pretty sure that the Aben Azel probably saw the, you know, because I think he quotes the Chachmei Lumio, if I'm not mistaken. So you're right, like over here, he says, V'heveinu l'mala divei Rambam b'tshuvaso l'chachmei l'nil. Right, you can see it in the Aben Azel himself. So it's not like he was unaware of that tshuva. Right, so it's interesting to think about what he's thinking. Romy, do you have an answer to Zachariah's question that you want to see?
Yeah, doesn't the Rambam there say that it's not l'hilchazo? So then that would explain, meaning he's kind of raising that, the inabisha thing in the case of Gina is not really l'hilchazo. So then the reason for the mechita of Asar Tfachim and Agina would need to be for some other reason, and you know, that might be what Eben Azel is jumping in.
So you're saying maybe if you read the Rambam and the Tshuva closely, he doesn't endorse Gina Mishum Inabisha Lamaskana.
Meaning it's possible, one way to read it is to say, yeah, he doesn't really think it's the Hilchata, that's what it has a Gri'iyah, but he does require a Mechita Shasar Tfachim. I think another way to read it is to say, he's really saying, yeah, that's a consideration, but we don't really do anything about that La Halacha. And therefore, the only reason you need it is a start to is for some other reason, which the Eben Azel is explaining.
Yeah, that's. I think that's a fair reading. I have to look back at the language more closely, but Zachariah, I think that sounds good on the face of it, right? In any event, we for sure have the Gemara itself, Nitfas Alav Kiganav, as embodying this idea. The Avin Ezel's extension is interesting just for the Gina case, right? But the category itself doesn't depend on the Rambam's extension. Yeah, very good. Okay, so let's turn to case number two. These cases are raised by the Levush Mordechai. So we thank Zacharia for putting up the Wikipedia page of Levush Mordechai, which is really good. So Zacharia, you want to remind us? Yeah, it's a great picture. You want to remind us who he was?
I'll have to pull up the Wikipedia page again, honestly.
He was Rav Shivan Slobodka. So he's You can look it up on WhatsApp, but the great picture with the mayor of New York and Rav Cook, right?
Right, Rav Cook, like, you know, very typically is like, you know, gazing towards the heavens.
Yeah. Moshe Mordechai Epstein was a very big one. You know, sometimes his pieces are a little dense, as this piece is, but I pulled out a few snippets for us to look at. So the first halacha here is the Rambam in Hilchos Shechinim, Aleph Beis. There are two Rambams, Aleph Beis and Aleph Gimel. So the Rambam talks about two people who jointly inherit a property or somehow jointly own a property, and they can't split it because it's Ein Bo Kedei Chalukah. So like an Eved, you can't really split an Eved in half. So what do you do in those cases when you have two 50-50 shareholders in the entity? So what's the rule? What do you do when you can't split it down the middle? What's the halacha's rule in general? What does the Rambam say in Aleph Beis over here?
There's a few different options. You can do like the good or a good, and then one guy can say either you buy me out or I'll buy your side out.
Exactly. Fun. You could try to, one person tries to buy out the other person. What else? What are the other options that come up here?
I think he says if it's made for schar, they can just kind of rent it out and then just put the profits.
Yeah, maybe you could also sell it to a third party. Yeah, rent it to a third party, sell it to a third party. Exactly. But what happens if nobody wants to move forward with the buyout, right? Amar kol lacham mehem ini mocher. Kol lacham mehem rotzeh sheyikne chilek chavera. So nobody wants to sell it. El yisharu shutvin beguf. They want to like pull their title in the actual thing. So the Rambam says, if you can rent it out, you rent it out. But if you can't rent it out, im chatzer hu, what's the Rambam's suggestion? Yeah, Ari, I'll go for it.
They rotate year by year?
Yeah. So one person gets to use it year one, the other person gets it year two, and they alternate every year. Correct? So the Ravid does, so the Rambam says, ima din chaluka. Sorry, im chatzeru. Ari, I'll just read this for us. Read these lines.
Yeah, im chatzeru shochni ba shana shana. She yafshar shishkenu shnehem ke'echad. Bnei hezek re'ir. Shari ein ba din chaluka. Ve'ein adam asoy litruach kol shloshim yom lifnot b'chatzeru l'chatzeru ele mishana l'shana.
Yeah, so Rama's point is why can't they jointly use it?
Because he says they can't like be mevater on hezek re'ir, that's still going to be an issue.
Exactly. Because of hezek re'ir, it's impossible for us to allow them to use it simultaneously. So they have to alternate years. The Ravid is pretty upset by this. Ariel, why is the Ravid upset?
Because he thinks that, I guess the highlighted part, he says that he thinks that you would be able to kind of move past hezek re'ir if you're choosing to live together in the scenario, and that you wouldn't have to do this whole shana shana. And then he kind of keeps going that kile olam lo yitroch liyot gole shana b'shana ba'od ein lo lachim yifnei ma'atiyelah, that like it'd be such a pain and a tircha to switch out your living space every year to switch back and forth.
Yeah. So the Ravid actually enters into this pretty interesting analysis where he says, which is the lesser of the two evils, right? To force the guy to just cope with hezek re'ir, or to send him into galus for every other year, right? Which is the worst of the two? And the Ravid says the worst of the two is to send him into galus every other year, right? It's better that each side deal with the hezek re'ir. So the Rambam clearly didn't like that, right? The Rambam clearly thought that hezek re'ir somehow justifies sending one party away every alternate year, which is pretty radical. So how do we explain this machlokes? So the Lush Mordechai here, I saved Zecharia the trouble of having to read the whole piece. I excerpted the important part. Says, according to the Rambam, so the Rambam's view is that you have to exile one of them in the alternate year. Kivan devechol eish she'ha'echa nichnas humazig lechavero hare asr lo lichnos. Kivan dehumazig mamish begufo ach im ein rotze lios go lashana shana chavero sherotze bezek kofeyu shelo ladur v'yachad shahare yazik lo bichnis aso. So the Rambam's point is that you can't force any of the parties to bear the hezekriya of their neighbor because there's real nezek going on here. And since there's real nezek, it's asr lo lichnos. That's the Rambam's view why, in order to avoid this type of nezek, we're justified in forcing them to take turns every alternate year. What's the Rambam's view? Anybody want to take a stab at the Ravid? What's the Ravid's position? So the Ravid, Achin HaRavid Sover. Are there any hands volunteering on this one? Any hands? Any volunteers on the Ravid? Ned, you want to take a stab at it? Is that a...
Yeah, sure. You just need to read it? Yeah. Achin HaRavid Sover, the Ikra Atam, Shemechuyav.
Yeah, so look at that. Just emphasize that key phrase. The real purpose of building the wall is lehetiv hachatzer. How do you translate that, Ned?
To better the wall, the courtyard, to like exactly. Make it, improve it.
Yeah, to improve the chatzer, right? So the purpose of the wall is not to protect Hezekiah, but to add value. To improve the chatzer, now it's a better chatzer in virtue of what, Ned?
You can now perform incident activities in the chatzer.
Exactly, Dvarim Tznuim, right? It gives you, you have a more capacious usage of the chatzer. But that's not a nezek issue at all, right? That's really just like a property value type consideration. Correct, Ned?
Yeah.
So what follows from that on the Ravid's view?
Okay, about hecha the yafshar lasad kotel, v'vaday ein mechuyab letzeit mikot bechoshena. She ends it at tabat hachatzer. So right where it's not possible to make a wall, so then you don't have to leave every year because that's not considered to be improvement of the chatzer. Rather, it's other abakilku achatzer who letzeit bechoshena.
Yeah, very interesting argument from the Lush Mordechai, right? Suggesting for the Ravid, meaning what? What's the suggestion here, Ned? If you force somebody to only have usage of a chatzer every other year, what are you doing?
That detracts from the value of the chatzer.
Yeah, so this is all just like an internal calculation about what adds more value. So the Ravid's argument is a chatzer that has no privacy, but that has continuous usage is a more valuable chatzer than one that has privacy without continual usage. So for the Ravid, everything is just about calculating the hatavas achatzer. And so, of course, you could have a trade-off and say, okay, we force them to deal with the privacy issue because in this situation, the hatavas achatzer is to give them continuous usage without privacy. For the Rambam, you can never do that because it's a nezek issue. And in his view, nothing would justify allowing somebody to be mazik somebody else to Israel. So I think the Lubush Mordechai is a very sharp explanation of the machlokas here, right? Do you guys agree? Very clean way of explaining the machlokas. Ned, do you agree?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's also medulic in the language of the Ravid. Oh, tisbol hezekriya.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I can handle it, right?
Yeah. Daniel, you have a hand on this?
Are we saying that according to the Ravid that he doesn't believe that this would be a case of hezekriya, or is he saying, going back to like the fakira that the Kehilas Yaakov brought up, that the hezek is just a hezek mammo, not a hezek aguf, which is what the Rambam would say, that it's a case of hezek aguf? Because we have seen
Go ahead, continue.
We have seen that when the case of like preventing people from being able to do activities in their field, that's just a hezek, that's considered hezekriya, but hezek mammo, not not just like, oh, it's not hezekiah at all.
Yeah, I would even go further and say that the way the Lubavitch Mordechai seems to understand this is not even hezek mamon. It's weaker than hezek mamon. Like when we say hezekiah shmei hezek, it's really just about like the devaluation of the property, but not every devaluation rises to the level of being mazikit, right? Because like being mazikit assumes that you like committed some wrong to his property. And here the point is, no, hezekiah shmei hezek is more of like the Yushalmi stone example. Like what could we do to make the neighborhood overall better, like to make the shchuna better? And the Ravitz point here is like, sometimes it's self-defeating, right? To give giving more privacy devalues the neighborhood. So I would say it's even weaker than a hezek mamon type thing. You know? That make sense to you?
Yeah.
Great. Anybody have a follow-up point on Lubavitch Mordechai's interpretation of Rambam Ravid? Okay, good. So let's move on to a second point that the Lubavitch Mordechai makes, right, together with that first point. So he points out to another machlokes Rambam Ravid in Shechinim Aleph Gimel. So here's a place where two people jointly leased a property. They jointly lease a chatzer. So let's say Ned and I co-sign a lease to use a courtyard. So kol echad mehen yachal lachok es chavero. Vilomar lo o schor mi beni chalki, o hasker li chalkecha. So this is like very strange. We signed the lease together, but then because of hezek ri'ah reasons, we could basically force the other person to either buy out my side of the lease or to sell his side of the lease. The Ravid doesn't like that. He says that's ridiculous. I have to check the version of what this phrase here actually says, because it looks like maybe a word is missing in the beginning.
In the Franco, I had nafsho like chose, which also didn't really understand.
Yeah, that makes sense. I guess it's the Bar Ilan garbled the word or something. They have kofa instead of osa.
Chose, like chesva.
What is it?
Nafshi chose.
What's the word?
Chose chesva tave.
Okay, we'll have to look at it. So I just have an aleph. They have a ches. Got it. So the Ravid's objection is shalmanaski and scharo, right? Meaning if you co-lease something, you basically incur the risk of the hezek ri'ah. It's like you voluntarily accepted it. You can't have a complaint afterwards, right? So if Ned and I jointly sign a lease on the property, we know in advance what we're getting into. So there's no real hezek ri'ah concern. That's the Ravid's view. But the Rambam's view is that they could each still buy out the other person's lease. They could force the other person to give up their lease because of hezek ri'ah. So everybody see how it's a very similar machlokas? Yeah? Okay. So what does the Lubavitch Mordechai here say? He says, the Rambam and the Ravid are l'shitasam. Why? So according to the Rambam, even if initially they both thought that they could deal with the other person's hezek ri'ah, even if they were socher al daskin, this is like a mechila on nezek, which you could always later retract. That's how he wants to explain the Rambam's view. But according to the Ravid, aval ha-Ravid, here's the key phrase. Ned, you want to take us just through this key phrase again?
What, just had a quick question.
Yeah, first just take us through the Ravid.
Yeah. About Ravid, okay. About the Ravid, Chiv Kotel Hezek Ria, Ena Tam Mishum Azik Ela Mitam Hitchaybut Ashutfin.
The Takin Echatzer. Yes, that's really really important phrase, right? So, for the Ravid, translate it for us, Ned.
So, since the source of the Chiv for the wall is emerges not from classic Nezek, but rather from some sort of just obligation between the two parties to somehow improve the Chatzer. So that's
Yeah, so notice two things, right? A, it's not about hezek, and further, that it's just about tikkun ha-chatzer. I like just like getting the chatzer as good as possible. So therefore, what follows from
that?
Yeah, meaning like, of course, you could always jointly agree to buy a chatzer that's not going to be 100% optimal. Right, it's like we agreed to buy a chatzer that's suboptimal in its use in its usage. But according to that's for the Ravid, that this is just about tikkun ha-chatzer. According to the Rambam, that it's about hezek, even if you're mochel and ezek, you could always later retract. So again, the Moshe Mordechai Lashitasa has a very nice explanation of the debate between the Rambam and the Raivin. So let's take Ned's hand, and then we have Zolti's hand.
Right. So for the Raivid, I think you have to say that Hezekiah is fundamentally monetary. I think it's hard to say that it's some other type of, like, I don't know, just like a sneered concern. That seems to be would apply even if there was an agreement. If it was like a formal isser, it'd be very difficult to say that you can have an agreement to it's almost like against making it's not against like something the Torah says.
Yeah. So meaning for the Raivid that this all seems very parav.
Right.
Yeah, 100%. I think that's exactly what Moshe Mordechai is doing for the Raivid. Is that a problem, Ned, or are you just observing?
No, I'm just observing. It's just
100%. Yeah, I agree. So we have we have Daniel and then Ariel.
Can you just then explain why the Raivid would say right at the end, he says that for Yerushar Matana, you are able to force. So how does, just explain how that fits in to the Levush Mordechai's
Yadira? I think the idea is that there, you didn't assume the risk when you initially bought it. So like, it's different when you and I jointly get ourselves into something with our own knowledge that we're going to get a suboptimal chatzer. Then when like we jointly receive it via Rusha, there the halacha tries to preserve each person's right to have an optimally functioning chatzer. So there the halacha says that you could compel one person to buy out your stake or to sell you his stake. Meaning the second Raivid is all about like the initial das was you knew what you were getting into. So there's a kind of implicit mechila that doesn't really exist when you're stuck with an inheritance that you never wanted to share in the first place. Does that make sense, Daniel?
Yeah, okay, fine. I mean, because I was just curious how it really fit in with, like, oh, but how does that fit in with, like, the betterment of the field by that? Like, if you just look at it in terms of, like, right, having the wall there will not actually better the field, make it better, right, then why does it matter how you acquired the fee, how you acquired it, like that?
Well, I think the idea here is that two people who jointly have to use this field are going to both suffer because of the hezekria, right? So you get suboptimal use of the field. Generally, the halacha wants to optimize like field use, so it allows for this buyout option, right? Unless they jointly bought it together knowing that they were going to get suboptimal use of the property. That's a kind of mechila, which they're later stuck with.
Okay, fine. So it has to be a case when they have to go into the property agreeing.
Exactly. That's the Raivid's key point here when he says, Shamanas came Skaro. Right, like they both, when you co-lease it, you both know that you're not going to get private usage. It's kind of strange to enter into a co-tenancy agreement and then legally buy out your co-tenant share, right? Compel him to give it up to you. Like, well, where do you think you were getting into? Whereas the Rambam says, like, oh no, you always have the later right to compel the buyout because you're never mochel. You can never be mochel in future nezah.
Okay, got it. So there's like an implicit mechila that's occurring when you buy it, Kozak.
Exactly. That's especially how the Levush Mordechai explains it. You can see here, Yeh Rakhma Mechila. It's all predicated on Mechila. But of course, in Mechila Nezek, you can later be Chozer. So, yeah, that's the theory. Right. Ariel?
I'm going to retract my hand.
Mm-hmm. On what ground? Ariel, you sure you want to do that?
I was thinking that the Raivid who says that you're just missing out on the ability to improve something doesn't sound like he's viewing Hezekiah as some form of real Nezek, but he's kind of feeling it as like there's some sort of added things you can have in your property if a wall would be there. Isn't that somewhat problematic if there's an outlook on Hezekiah which doesn't actually fall into Nezek?
No, I think that's totally okay, right? I mean, I think this view basically says that the word Hezekiah is a misnomer. Right, hezekria just means like the word nezek is ambiguous, right? It can mean like wrongful harms, or it could just mean, I guess, something like diminution of value. And for the Ravid and this whole camp, they're clearly thinking that Hezek Ria, even on the view that Shmei Hezek, is not thinking in terms of like Bava Kama Hezek, as in like a tortious wrongdoing. It's just meaning that like it's something that the halacha takes into consideration in the way it conceives of zoning rules. Yeah, that's exactly the point. Right, Tarya?
Yeah, I think this sheds a little bit more light on what we saw earlier in a few pieces of the Rush, right? The Rush kind of said, oh, it's not really a Nezek, it's just his Chayavus Mamon between them. And once you're Mochel, you're Mochel. Or it says, oh, Hagina Nifsedes. All right, I was, when we saw these, I was a little unsure how extreme to take these, but kind of like once we have this kind of like framing of it, I think that's actually a very reasonable read in the Rush as well, to read it like the Lushmortai's reading the Ravid.
Totally. So I definitely agree with that. I would just say as a logical matter, this is why I split it up, and this relates to my response to Zolfi before, we could still distinguish between a Nezek Mamon theory of Hezek Ria, right? So it's Nezek to the Chatzer in virtue of your diminishing its value, and a non-Nezek-based theory of Hezek Ria altogether, like we're discussing now. So like we logically, there's still that in-between ground where it can be Nezek, but just Nezek to the Chatzer. Of course, you're right that the Rush might be going for a more radical view, like we're discussing today, like in the Ravid, that it's actually not Nezek. But I don't think his statement, like Minyas Tashmishin in the Tshuva, automatically commits him to the more radical view that the Levush Mordechai is attributing to the Ravid. See that?
I hear. I mean, I think the nafkamina of the once you're Mochel, you can never retract that. I think it's like a really strong nafkamina between like Nezek and just like monetary chiyuv.
Yeah, but remember that you still could retract monetary Nezek mechilas. So remember like Shavor Kadi and Krak Susi are retractable, even though those are just Nezek to Mamon.
Exactly, and the Rush says that the Mechila by Hezek Ria is non-retractable, it's binding finally.
Oh yes, exactly, correct. Yes, that Rush, correct, that Rush is definitely in line with the analysis today.
Yeah,
100%, exactly. Yes, 100%, that Rush is. We're actually going to see that later on today. I'm going to bring that back just to tie it into this analysis. Great. Any other questions on the discussion so far? All right, everyone's good. Thumbs up if you're good. Okay, great. Rafi, you're good? Excellent. Okay, so let's look at this Yad Ramah. So this brings us to, I would say, our fourth Nafkamina, our fourth halacha that we're going to discuss today. Remember, so number one was the Mechitza of Asara Tvachim for Nitfas Alav Tiganav. Number two was the Chalukah Shana Bishana, Macholkes Rambam Ravid. Number three was the case where you jointly leased a property at the same time as somebody else. Could you then be chozer? Number four is this discussion here of the Yad Ramah in Bava Basra Beis Amidala. Anybody get a chance to see this really great Yad Ramah? Might even know what the background issue is here. Kobe, did you get a chance to see this Yad Ramah?
Yes.
Great. So you want to tell us what's going on, Kobe?
He's talking about
what's the main issue?
How much each person has to give? Like when you split a chatzer, let's say, how much each person has to give to building the fence? Like how much land and how much material?
Exactly. When you're splitting, when you're building a fence, is the fence built equally on both properties? Or is there some prorated way of assigning majority of the fence to be built on one side and most of the materials to come from one party and the other party only chips in a bit? What would be the rationale for, what would be the type of case where you might want to prorate the assignment of payment?
So maybe like if one person has way more land, maybe let's say, so you might want to say like, oh, he has to chip in way more because he's getting more use maybe out of the wall.
Exactly. When the chatzeros are unequal. The Yarama discusses the case of a bechor and a non-bechor who jointly inherit properties. The bechor gets a double chelek. But you could imagine any two chatzeros that are abutting each other, where one is much larger than the next. And exactly as Kobe told us, you might think that the person who has a larger chatzer is gaining more from the wall, right? Because he's securing a larger benefit for himself. Right, Kobe?
Yep.
Yeah. Some people think this way, like in terms of taxes or something, right? So like, if you have a larger property, you should pay higher property taxes because like you're gaining more from the services of the community, like in protecting your big property. Whereas somebody who has a small property is gaining less because they're only getting the protection of their small property. You ever hear these types of arguments? No, or like somebody who has a lot of money is gaining like a lot of protection from the government because the government's protecting their millions of dollars, whereas like the poor person is only getting protection on his like $1,000 that he has in the bank, right? So the value of the government's protection is worth more to somebody who has more property. This was like an argument that's sometimes made in taxation. So what does the Yad Armas say here? So tell us, Kobe. Take us through this interesting discussion here. You could read through these few lines.
So he says, "V'lo tami hani mi leheka de shavu chokin la'adadi, ela fil heka de lo shavu chokin la'adadi," right? Even in the case where they don't have equal, they should still have to pay the same amount or put up the same amount of land. "Kigon b'chor pashut shabal l'chalav shabayum," right? "Ki yavi bein b'machum akoto bein b'binyan ke'adadi yavi." They both have to give the same amount. "The high kotel he meets avid lav lash."
Oh, so here's the key argument. Right. Here's the key argument. What's his argument?
Right. It's not the point of the wall is not to like make the land worth more or anything. Right. "The how lava shfuki mishavak only gera kagera to come in my bain bavira bain tashmisha, can we allow the head to bridge preaking pracking, right? He says the point is not about like the gain you're going to get. Right? The point is to prevent hezekiah. And since they both have an equal obligation to not damage the other with hezekiah, so obviously they both have to put up the same amount the wall to prevent each of them from doing the equal obligation of not doing hezekiah."
Excellent. Excellent. So in a word, the Yad Armas here basically has a chakira, right? And he says, what's the point of this kosel? Is the kosel here to increase the value of the properties? Or is it here to just get rid of one party harming the other party? And he says, if it's here to generate value to the properties, then it would be sensible to prorate the costs of the wall based on the size of the properties, right? Because the person with the bigger property is gaining more from the wall than the person with the small property. But he says that's not what this is about. Instead, it's about each party's obligation to not harm the other. From the perspective of the mazik, the obligations are equal. My duty to not harm you is the same as your duty to not harm me, right? Therefore, they each have to pay mechayvi ki hadadi l'saluke hezek ri'ya mehadadi. They have an equal obligation to not harm the other, therefore they ought to chip in equal. That's like a pretty nice Yad Armas. So do you find the argument compelling? Do you disagree with the Yad Armas here? Obviously right.
Yeah, Rabbi, there's no like consideration that this wall is not going on the property line, right? Like there's no, like he's saying, I thought when I initially read this that like the focus was kind of on Be'emtza, and like there might be some who say that, you know, it should go somewhere more in the middle, not necessarily, not necessarily lopsided like the 2/3 and 1/3 of the Bechor.
Well, that's exactly the suggestion that he's entertaining, right? Maybe he's wondering, should it be split like 50% exactly on the property line, protruding halfway into each property? Or should it be prorated, meaning the person with the bigger property the person whose property is four times the other's property should have four times the amount of the wall sitting on his property than the of the neighbor.
Okay. Got it.
So that's what he's entertaining. He rejects that. He says that theory would make sense if the wall was about improving the value of the property, because then the guy with the bigger property gains more. But since this is just about each mazik having a duty to neutralize his hezek re'iyah, so they're co-equals, and the wall should be split down the middle. You see that, Josh? Make sense now? Yeah, great. So what do you guys think? Is the argument, Zacharia, the argument good?
I think it's reasonable. I think it's self-consistent. I think it works well with other positions of the Adarma and Hezek Re'iyah, emphasizing the Isser component. You can't walk around with your eyes closed all the time. Like, it's very emphasizing that the problem is to be the mazik here, and therefore that is going to be, you know, everyone has the same kind of Isser. But I'm a little uncomfortable with, you know, his kind of just denial that there is a monetary benefit. If I have a huge land where I can now do private stuff, that is a benefit, right? He's saying, like, it's actually migra gari. It actually ruins your land to have a wall to block hezek re'iyah, right? Like, he kind of thinks, like, maybe it's just like a tzmius iser thing. And, you know, I don't know. I'm a little perplexed about that.
Yeah, I totally agree. I even found this line of migra gari to be very unpersuasive, right? I mean, because it's true, I guess, in some sense, having a wall is annoying, have it in your property, but not if it actually increases the value of your property overall, right? I mean, so it really just depends on the mitzias. And I think if you think about this from a Lush Mordechai's perspective, his reading of the Ravid, right, of course there's a Shevach Karka component here. According to his reading of the Ravid, that's the purpose of the Hezek Re'iyah Koso, right? So I think on that theory, actually, arguably the Yadarma would be incorrect. Right, the kosel should be apportioned both in its cost and in its placement according to like the prorated size or value of each person's property. You agree, Zacharia? Yeah. So let's think we have some hands here. Shmuel, did you have a hand still?
Yeah, I was going to raise a similar thought to what Zacharia just said.
Yeah, great. Romy and then Benji.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I forgot the name of the case that you like a lot in Bava Metzia or something, where the guy goes into the other person's field and makes it better. Like, so
Yogurt. That's,
yeah. Meaning it seems like it's kind of ignoring that component of this whole thing, which is regardless of what the chiyuv is, why is it all based on the chiyuv? I can know that the chiyuv is for hezek re'iyah, I guess that's what Zacharia was saying. It doesn't necessarily mean that any other benefit shouldn't have to be accounted for.
Right, meaning you're saying put aside the Lavush Mordechai's Rambam Ravid disagreement about what the purpose of the wall is. Let's grant the Yadarma that the purpose is Lasalik Hezek Re'iyah. There's still an ancillary benefit of Benet.
Right.
Right, that you receive. Yeah, I think that's also a really interesting way of putting the point. Yeah, I think that's a really good point. Benji?
Yeah, even just looking at the Nezek component, while it might be the same Nezek Haguf one to the other, if we talk about Nezek Mamon, if you're looking into someone's much bigger property in there and he's not able to use it and there's a Chisaron in the Tashmish, that's a much greater Nezek that the person with the smaller property is causing the bigger property than the person with the bigger property looking into the smaller property. So maybe even the person with the smaller property should be responsible for paying for more of the wall.
I think that's a really excellent point. Do you guys hear Benji's comment? So Benji's saying, even if it's a Hezek issue, why can't the Nezek be unequal, right? The guy with the bigger property is being harmed more. So I actually think the Yadarma has a response to that. I sort of snuck that in my interpretation of the Yadarma. What do you guys think the Yadarma's response is? That's why I bolded this section. Keeping the Chuvayi Bahai Azeka Kadagi Divinu. The Chuvayu Maski Adadi, Mechaivi Kadadi, Lisaluke Hezek Re'iyah Mehadadi. I think what the Yadarma is trying to do is like thinking about it from the Mazik's perspective and not from the Nizak's perspective. Right? So if you think about how much the Nizak is suffering, you're right that there's a discrepancy. But his thought is, from the Mazik's perspective, it's like, it's just the fact that I'm harming the other party that generates the chiyuv, not the magnitude of the nezek that generates the chiyuv. And so once you think of it of just like the Isser Lahazik, I think Zacharia mentioned that earlier, then the chiyuv is indifferent to the magnitude of the nezek that occurs. Do you see that? Does that make sense, Benji? And I think that's why the Yad Rama here is emphasizing, you can see, Hezekah Kadadi, the Chuvayu Mazki Ahadadi, Umechaivi Kehadadi Lasalude Hezekim. Like, he's not thinking about how much damage they suffer, just about the fact that they're Mazik. I think that's a really great point. Okay, any further thoughts on the... Oh, yeah, so that's the Yad Rama. Okay. The Chazon Ish has a pretty interesting response to this. It's along the lines that some of you were suggesting. So you can see here, the Chazon Ish quotes the Tur, who basically just paskins the Yad Rama. And he says, Yesh la'ayin, kivan dehezek ri'ya shmei hezek, Hare hakosel osa shavach b'chatzer. Right? Like, maybe like Romy's point or Zacharia's point. Like, look, at the end of the day, the wall is increasing value to the chatzer. And therefore, the roi sheyachofu zezeh lasos kosel kibosha chatzer zezeh lasos beishar v'dalos l'chatzer. Meaning, why isn't the Lavush Mordechai right? Like what he said for the Raivid, that should be applicable here also. And there the equitable principle would be to do it based off the value of the field. Right. Which is like a pretty good objection, I think. And Chazon Ish is basically saying, like, that Yad Rama is right. And then he kind of just has this thing, oh, like, yeah. His answer is really not so compelling over here. Answer, he just kind of restates what the Yad Rama says. But I think definitely the Chazon Ish's objection here is quite persuasive. Right? It's certainly not obvious that the Hezek Riya shouldn't be apportioned based off the Shechinim consideration. So I think that this too, this Chakira, or this Halacha raised by the Yad Rama, takes an important stand on this Nezek versus Shechinim Chakira. Yad Rama himself comes down on the Nezek side. The Chazon Ish seems to come down much more on the Shechinim side, at least in the way he frames his objection. Everybody see that? Good. Thoughts on the Chazon Ish? Sounds good? Yeah, thumbs up? All right, great. Josh, you have a hand? Is that a hand, Josh? Or?
Yeah, I just wanted to ask... are we sure that even if it's about like improving the monetary like ability to use the field, are we sure that having more land means proportionally it's more value? Like if it was about like being able to farm more land, then fine. But since it's just about like walking outside shirtless, that value could be the same whether or not you have like 1 acre or two, no?
Totally, totally. So I think you'd have to say, like in the Raivid though, it seemed to be about like tikkun hachatzer. Right, which to me sounds like the hatavas hachatzer, like what does the best thing for the property? And to me, that sounds very property based, rather than like what you were just describing. So, but I hear how you could say if it's just something like that, then maybe they're still shava. So for sure, you'd have to do the empirical analysis to see if somebody's actually gaining, right? Okay. Good. I want to just close off this section here by taking a quick look at the Shulchan Aruch and Siman Kuf Samach Aleph. And you see this here, drawing an important distinction. Let me just give me 1 second to check out my kids who are beating each other up outside. So just give me 30 seconds. Take a look at the Shulchan Aruch and the Nesivis right here. I will pick up in. You guys hear the screaming out there? Yeah, okay. So just give me 1 minute to check on them.
whoever's listening on YU Torah is in for a real, real treat during this recording.
Well, I think my wife has it under control, so we might still hear screaming, but not my cries. Okay, great. So let's look at the Shulchan Aruch here for a second. The Shulchan Aruch paskins the Yad Ramah in some Kuf Samach Aleph. Well, yeah. So the Shulchan Aruch, in some Kuf Samach Aleph, the Shulchan Aruch paskins the din of Bnei Achatzer. Now, the Bnei Achatzer all have to pitch in for the public goods that they receive. So you can see here, Bnei Achatzer Kofin says that Libnos Delas, Ubeishar, Lachatzer, Vechim Kola Dvarim Shah Chatzer Tzarch Lahem, Tzarch Gadol, Kola Dvarim Shah Nagu Bnei Amadina Lasosam. So all the big things that are necessary for Tikkun Achatzer, everybody in the Chatzer has to pitch in. This is something that we're going to talk about later on in the semester, a very important principle. Then in Sif Gimel, the Shulchan Aruch specifies the distributional principle. How do you collect? Right. So what's the rule over here? How do you collect? So this is like a taxation question, right? What's a fair way to tax? What's the distributional principle that we get here in the Shulchan Aruch?
Fi mamon, or proportionally.
Yeah, fi mamon, right? So basically, based off the value of each estate in the chatzer. And there's Misha Omer who disagrees with that. But the first view is that you pay kifi mamon. So the Nesivis here is a little concerned. First of all, we know from the Gemara itself that Beishar is itself motivated by Hezek Ria. Is the screaming really distracting? Or is it just in the background? Yeah. So the Beishar itself is motivated by Hezek Ria, right? Do you recall that from the Sugya and Daf days? Right, the reason why you have to build that guard tent or the wall in front of a chatzer is to make sure the people on the rabbim on the outside aren't peering in. Sound familiar? So why over here does the Shulchan Aruch say that you're gover l'fi mamon? But elsewhere, the Shulchan Aruch actually paskins in Siman Kuf Nun Zayin, the Ramah, that you're not gover l'fi mamon, you just split the wall equally between the parties. So the Nesivus here has an interesting theory. He says, "Af de beishar hu mishum hezek ria." And when it comes to hezek ria, generally we know from Siman Kuf Mem Zayin that both parties pay equally, not based off the value of the benefit they're getting. Okay, so what's the distinction that he draws? Why are the cases different? Josh?
Yeah, in that case, there's equal hezek between the two neighbors. But in this case, they're all trying to protect, let's say, one property from the public, which is the mazik in this case.
Yeah, that's really good. Say a little more, Josh, about the first part. In that case, Yishlomer the shiny hasam.
Right. So yeah. In that case, you have to pay an equal amount because you're causing equal harm.
Well, this is the thing I'm not sure about. It's not obvious in that case you're causing equal harm. If I'm harming your gorgeous estate and you're just harming my hobble, my little, whatever, it's like a little, my little hut or something, right? But how does the Nesivus get this?
Right, because they each have a shame, Mazik, at the very least.
Exactly. Exactly. The core move that he's making is that, like, morally speaking, in terms of like the shame mazik, the wrongdoing, we both are on equal footing. Even if in the magnitude, we're unequal. But for the purposes of making the liability equal, it's sufficient that we're both doing equal wrongs, right? We're equal mazik, we're both mazikin. But in the Beis Shaar case, go on, Josh.
In the Beis Shaar case, they're not equal. They're not equal in terms of the shame mazik.
Why? Because they're
are mazik. None of them are maziks.
Exactly.
Mazikim.
Yeah, exactly. None of them are mazikim. Very good. And therefore, the distributional principle is that the nizaks who want to jointly solve their nezek problem each pay kifim amonim. So I actually think the nesivis is a nice explication of what I was reading into the Yarama, that for some reason you just have to think that like the fact that they're both shame mazics, shame mazikin, is sufficient to put them on equal footing, even if you concede that the magnitude of the nezek is different. Yeah, great. That's really important to see this. Okay, great. Zahar, you have a hand on this?
Right, I think the nesivus is just maybe to kind of make it a little more explicit. Like, if once you're granting both factors, that the shame mazik is a problem and the quantity of being a nizak is also a problem, why is it so obvious that the shame mazik overrides? I don't know.
I totally agree. You know, this is a little bit, I think, Benji's point before. I totally agree with you. That's, I think, the Chazon Ish's objection. Right, going back to the Chazon Ish, right? Who cares that they both have a shame mazik? I mean, Kos Lo Sof Shalach B'Chatzer, that there's still this like further component that makes them unequal. So I agree with you, and I think the Chazon Ish should not have conceded this point to the Yad Rama at the end in this last section. So I'm totally on board with the anti Yad Rama conclusion, right? Which would the Yad Rama, I think, clearly is thinking this in terms of nezek and like exclusively in terms of like shame mazik. Certainly, if you think of this in the Levush Mordechai, in the name of the Ravid camp, there's nothing to talk about. Of course, there should be unequal chiyuvim. You're all pointing out that even within the nezek camp, there should be room for unequal, right, chiyuvim in the kosel. Right? Yeah, so I totally agree with that. Further thoughts on this very interesting exchange? Okay, good. So that's a further nafkamina type. At least part of this is a nafkamina to the question of whether we're talking about nezek or shevach achatzer / hatavas achatzer in hilchos shchenim. Okay, so our second to last nafkamina that we'll discuss today is raised by the Rush in Aleph Hey in Bava Basra, and then furthered very importantly by the Nebuki Yosef. B'shem the Ra'ah. Does anybody remember what's going on here in the Rush Aleph Hey? Anybody get this far in the source sheets? Tzharia?
Yeah, so he's addressing the Mishnah where he says, Hakol Kumin Medina, and we in the Gemara we say, oh, Lafuke Hutz V'Dafna. And he wonders, how far does this reach? Let's say one party wants to be konis etok shalo, pay for the whole wall, use only his own space. And he wants to solve that creative problem just by putting up this hutz v'dafna, the reed wall. Is that within his rights, or can the other party be ma'ake and say, no, let's do the stone wall, shared and properties?
Exactly. So you just do the cost benefit analysis, right? So the question is, the Mishnah says you have to split the costs of the wall according to the standards of the Minhag HaMedina. That can be very expensive if the Minhag HaMedina is to require these big thick walls. So even though it's split between you and your neighbor, you might incur a pretty high cost. So could you just say, hey, look, what the halacha really cares about here is that there's no hezek riyah. I'm happy to build the wall exclusively on my side, But it'll be a shabby wall, right? Like Hutzavidafna, entirely on my side, but there's still a net saving for me. Everybody's, that's the idea. So can you do that? What do you guys think? Should you be able to do that? Yes or no? Raise your hand if you think you should be able to do that. Yeah, Josh, Skaria, Josh Brofman. Great. Right? It seems pretty reasonable, right? So the Rush has two views about this. Skaria, tell us about his two views.
So the first view is that it's totally fine. As long as since you're being Messiah Hezek, Dio, just says it's sufficient.
One second. Yeah, exactly. So this is the key phrase right here. That this is a totally permissible move. It's totally kosher. Once you get rid of the hezekria, that's all you really have to do.
Right. The other view is that no, the other party can protest. You can ba'akev him because it says the flaw in the chutzpah dafnis is not a mechita shel kayam. It won't last super long, and this will require me. And it kind of falls down to kind of relitigate this situation, bring you to Beis Din, get you to pay and put up your chutzpah dafna again or something else. So there's understanding that the Mishnah is detailing that Chazal were instituting a more permanent solution that would require Shechinim to have this kind of choma shel kayama between them.
Exactly. Now that I think is a very intriguing discussion. The notion that you shouldn't be able to move it into your own property because the solution is less permanent, right? The way the Rush has it, and since it's ena mechitza shel kayama, it's starich litzok alecha tamid kishetipo mechitza lesalik me'alai hezek liyasta. So what do you guys make of that? What type of argument is that? What type of rationale is that? This fear that the remedy is just going to be temporary, and then there's the headache of having to sue you each time to replace it. Roby?
I mean, I see something like it's not about the actual hezekria in terms of me seeing you, because you're right, every time you could rebuild it and I won't, have to be seen. But it is a problem if we're talking about this general sense of like, I live in a community where I'm like kind of safe and secure and like I don't have to be, meaning it's a chutzpah issue is the point, I think.
Yeah, so that's one really interesting way of thinking about it. Romy's suggesting that from like a pure torts perspective, from a nezek perspective, there's nothing wrong with having temporary solutions that when that solution fails, we relitigate to reestablish them.
To be fair, yeah.
But if you look at this from the perspective of Shechinim, so like the field of the value of the property overall is less secure because there's always like an impending threat of hezekria.
Yeah, to be fair, you could also say that it really is just, meaning the other side thinks that, okay, even if I can make you rebuild it every time, there's going to be this gap, like I'm going to have to sue you and it's going to take some time and there's still going to be problems. They both really are focusing on hezekria as actual hezek. And
totally. I agree 100%. So Romy's saying that there's also another way of looking at it. Maybe interim hezekria, maybe like it's a general theory of the halacha's requirements for solving tort damages. A legal solution should be permanent and not an ad hoc temporary fix. Right, Romy? Even from like the Nezikin perspective, right? How does the Rush come down on this? Let's see. Romy, how does the Rush come down? In your Kippurusha Kama, why?
And he says your responsibility is just to solve the problem. If we have to solve it again later, we'll solve it again later.
Exactly. So the Rush's preferred view is the first view. Like Josh preferred initially, that of course you could just build on your own property. What do you do about the argument that this is just an ad hoc solution? The Rush says we don't care because in general, whenever the halacha requires you to be mesalik nezek, it's sufficient that you get rid of the nezek. And if after time more nezek occurs, such a great phrase, yeshuv nevaretz, right? That's why we have judges. And there are judges who could deal with this thing. So that seems to suggest that from the torts perspective, an interim solution is a kosher solution. Right, Romy? Now,
you might respond to the Rosh and say, Mr. Rosh, I totally agree with you from the torts perspective, from the Nezek perspective, but what's at bar here is the Shechinim perspective, right? Like, and even if from the Nezek perspective, this is a good solution, it's not a good solution from the Hatava Sachatzer perspective. Right? So Rumi, that'll be a way of making your point to address even the Rosh's answer. Let me just, I see we have a hand from Josh Brockman, and then we'll get to the Rosh. Josh, go for it.
I just think it's interesting that if you bring up the Tosfos from earlier about like the word glue, that it seemed like having a wall that fell down might be worse than not having the wall there at all. Because like even the, you know, Mandamash Hezekria, Lavashme Hezek, and I guess it is. So I would say that in this case, can't you say that even for the Nezek side, like you're making it worse by putting up a wall that's going to fall down?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's an interesting thought, especially juxtaposing these two Makoros. Like maybe like the interim solution is somehow worse than the other solution. Yeah, that's a really interesting idea. Yeah, good point. I want to now move us to a further dimension of this discussion about whether you could just build the wall on your property. So far, the Rosh's discussion is about whether you could build a flimsy wall entirely on your rishus versus building a more stable wall that's 50-50. Okay. Then Mukhe Yosef cites the Ra, who goes beyond this and says, what if you wanted to build a permanent wall, like a Gvil, Gazis, right, the hefty wall, entirely on your own rishus? So it seems like that's a win-win situation, right? Like what could your neighbor's objection be, right? The Rush consideration falls away because the solution is now permanent, right? It's a stable wall. So anybody get a chance to see the Mukhe Yosef citing the Ra? Really great Shita. It's hard to get a chance to see it yet.
Yeah.
Tell us about it.
Yeah, so he says, so even if one party wants to build the stone wall, which is Kamina Kamedina, but totally in his own property and from his own materials, so the other person can be ma'akev, and he gives a few reasons. Number one, there seems to be a benefit of, you know, being able to be so mech stuff on top of the wall. I guess, you know, you're going to be, you know, lean your sukkah against it, all these other sorts of stuff, like we saw, you know, the different sorts of beams you could put on. And then he brings up, oh, why can't he just like say, oh, I'll give you the right, I'll sell you the right to be so meich, so let's obviate that. He says, oh, I don't buy it. Or fine, I'll give you the right to be so meich as a matana, but then of course, you know, soni matanas yechia. And these are all considered valid tainas to the extent that the other party can be ma'akev, and therefore they would have to build the koso of ansa.
Super. So the Ra was suggesting that it's not a viable solution to be machnis l'toch shelo, even if it's a gvil gazis, a permanent wall, because the neighbor loses out on the benefit of architecturally having a wall in his property that he could now build on, or lean stuff on, or use, right? If it's totally on the neighbor's property, then the abutter won't have a right to use it for his purposes. So there's a famous objection. So, I mean, that's like a pretty striking view, right? What do you guys think of the Ra's position? Shmuel, what do you think of it?
I mean, I hear it. Kind of seems like the guy who wants to lean stuff on the wall gets more benefit by not having to pay his half of the wall, but if he wants to object, I guess that's his right.
Okay, so you like the Ra, but do you have any trouble with it? Like, what strikes you as implausible, perhaps, with the Ra?
I mean, all the halachic concerns seem to be valid. Like, that was the whole purpose of this whole sort of monetary fiasco. So I'm not sure exactly why we're pulling him back in for the non-halachic concerns.
Explain what you mean by halachic and non-halachic.
I mean, like, Hezekria was the entire reason we were building the wall in the first place. And now, like, we're creating issues based on the guy wanting to lean his stuff on the wall. It doesn't.
Exactly. Right, exactly. The issue here is Hezekiah was the reason for the wall. Clearly, this wall satisfies the Hezekiah issue. But like, what does the neighbor's entitlement or desire to get use of the architectural structure, like, what does that have to do with the Hezekiah stuff? Right, Shmuel? Yeah, so like, the Ra is really head-scratching on that front. Zolti, you have a hand on this, and then we'll look at the Taz's objection.
Yeah, also, I don't really understand, like, for example, like,
what happened? Like, why couldn't the neighbor just build a small wall for him to do whatever structural support he wanted? Because at the end of the day, that's like, either they would have split the wall and he would have had to build that part anyways, or if he wants staff support, he could just build it himself anyway. Like, there's no, this is not like a lose-win situation. It's a win-win situation, because either way, if he wanted that support, he'd build that wall. And the alternative is they split the wall and he builds the wall.
Right. I guess the idea here is that the neighbor who didn't build anything, right, like, because he doesn't get usage of the wall that was built in the Prost property, so he's going to have to build a bigger wall, I guess, in his own property to get the same results. Whereas if the wall was split 50-50, he would get at least 50% of the space from the neighbor. So let's say you need like a 6-foot, like a, let's say you get a foot wide wall to, per, like for your sukkah, right? Or to get the structure you need. If you have a usage of the neighbors, then you only have to do 6 inches on your side of the property. Whereas if a neighbor builds it entirely on his, now you need to build a foot long, foot wide wall on your side. So you lose that advantage.
You wouldn't be able to accomplish it with just a 6-inch wall?
Apparently not. No, well, the point is that you're entitled to get 6 inches of his wall. But that seems to be the issue. The question is, like, where does that entitlement come from if this is purely about hezekiah? And that's the Taz's objection. So you can see here, the Taz weighs in on this. And he says, Khan Einal Zael Salika Hezekriya, is the Taz in Kufman Zion. The whole purpose of the wall is just to get rid of Hezekriya. The Kivan Shabona Mishalon, the Salik, the Kosal Shalavan, and Miyim Chaviyado. And that which the Ra wrote, Sherot Zeshiyalo Kosal Shiyismachalo, Utamua Meod, Mehechon Zachal is that. Where does the neighbor get the right to use this wall? Adilomatsina de Chaibu Chachamim Eshneim Lasas Mechitza. It's like a purely Hezekriya wall. So, like, where does the support wall come from? So that's like a pretty strong objection, right? And the Taz is pretty upset by this. So how might we respond to the Taz? What's the best we could say to respond to the Taz? Like, where's the rock coming from? Josh Bachman? Josh, I'm giving you a bit. I think Josh might be having audio issues.
Oh, yeah, okay, it's back. I mean, I guess you can argue that if the purpose of the wall is to improve the value of the property, somehow he has the right to also have the improved value of having something to support his stuff on.
Yeah, I mean, you have to say, like, the only thing that makes sense to explain why a Hezekiah wall can morph into a structural support wall is if you think that Hezekiah is only one partial consideration in the chiyuv to build the wall in the first place, right? It itself derives from a much broader consideration, like the Moshe Mordechai said, like lehitiv esachatzer, like taknin esachatzer. So if you think that like the wall here is primarily to increase the value of the properties of the courtyards, then you can kind of see where like both hezekiah and the structural support stuff could converge together. Whereas if you're thinking purely in terms of nezek, it's very difficult to see, as the Taz objects, why a Hezekiah din should morph into a Tikkun HaChatzer din. You guys agree with that analysis? Yeah, thoughts on that? Does that sound compelling? Tzacharia, looks like you have a thought on this.
I'm not sure. I don't know. I think that's probably like the best we can do for the Ra'a.
But you think it's still a little dachuk. You're on board with the Taz right now.
As in, given the Ra'a, this is what I would say. Not if you, if you're saying this, I wouldn't say the Ra'a.
Right, right. Fair enough. Okay, so the last source I wanted to cover today is this Rush, which we already discussed. Just to bring it as another nafkamina to this important debate between the Nezek camp and the Shechidim camp. You recall the Rush said that when it comes to the Zikin, even this day, Mamon, Mechila could always be retracted. Right? So, and Karak Susi, Shaver Kadi, Yachal Achsero is the Rush in Aleph Beis. So why over here, the Rush himself holds that Mechila is binding. So you cannot retract your Mechila. But when it comes to this Kemamon, you could retract the Mechila. Right? So you guys remember what the Rush said? We saw this a while ago. What was the Rush's answer? Why is Mechila effective and binding for the Hezek Ria, even though it's not effective for this Kemamon? What did the Rush actually say? You might remember? Roby?
Because it's about the Chiyuv. You basically you obligate yourself to a certain amount of money. And they're meaning, and then you then you can be mochel on that. I just got confused by the ending.
Just look at the part that I highlighted.
Yeah, because the other person has a monetary claim against the other guy.
So what's the difference between the Krak Susi case and the Hezek Ria case?
There's no nezek to your actual mamon. There's just a claim on you to provide money.
Yeah, he seems to be saying there's no nezek here at all. All there is a chiyuv mamon. Right, so it's not a chiyuv mamon that derives from a chiyuv nezek or a shame nezek. It's just a pure chiyuv mamon. That's all there is here. How do we make sense of that? Right. So it seems like the best way to understand that is in the direction of Hilchos Shechinah. Right. This is really just about a financial obligation to shore up the quality of the properties, et cetera, et cetera. It does not have its origin in Chiyuv and Nezikin. See that, Rumi? That we were getting at? And Zachary, that's what you were suggesting earlier. Yeah. Okay, so just to quickly review. So today we wanted to survey the Mekoros that seem to take a stand on this idea of whether Hezek Ria is a Nezek issue. And again, the Nezek Tzad is open question whether Nezek Haguf versus Nezek Mamon. That's something we broached earlier. Or is this a non-Nezek issue, what we'll just call a Shechinim issue? And by that we primarily mean something that's here to collectively raise the value of the properties, like a public goods issue, by imposing the costs on all the relevant shareholders. But it's not that anybody's considered to be harming somebody else. So we saw a few issues that seem to relate to this question. Number one is the kosel of Yud Tvachim, Lemitfas Alekigana, that's clearly seems to be a property value type issue. Number two, the debate between the Rambam and the Ravid about whether Hezek Ria forces you to require parties to alternate years. The Rambam said of the Levush Mordechai's reading that Hezek Ria is real Nezek, so the parties are not allowed to co-use the property. The Levush Mordechai thought the Ravid's view is that Hezek Ria is never about Nezek in the first place. It's really just about Hatavas HaChatzer. And then in that case, Hatavas HaChatzer is to have a constant consistent, contiguous use, that gives the chatzer greater value than the lack of privacy. The third issue is whether if you originally signed the co-tenancy in the chatzer, where you were going to jointly use it, is that considered like a type of mechila? The Rambam said no. According to Levush Mordechai, that's because there's a kind of mezek going on here. You can always retract the mechila mezek. The Ravid said, yes, that is a binding mechila, which you cannot retract. And again, the Levush Mordechai said, that's because this is just a tikkun hachatzer type halacha, not a mezek one. Then we saw the fourth issue, which was this question of, can one party, do we prorate the costs and the space of the wall between a big, like a, between shechinim, who one has a big property, but the one has a small property. The Yad Ramah thought, of course not, because from a Nezek perspective, they're equal wrongdoers. The Yadarma himself, though, recognized that if you look at this from the perspective of the valuations of the Chatzeros, that would be a good basis to prorate the cost of the wall and its allocation in space. The Chazanish seemed to walk away from the Yadarma, and he thought that in principle there seemed to be a good reason to prorate the cost of the wall and how it's situated. Then we saw the discussion in the Rush. What if one party wants to build a flimsy wall on his own property? So the Rush had two dais about this. And the most interesting shita here, so within the Rush itself, we have Rumi's suggestion that maybe from a torts perspective, a temporary solution that might fall down is a good tort solution. But from the valuation of the chatzer, a temporary solution that doesn't lend permanent security to the chatzer is not a good solution. Right, Rumi? That was your... And then we have my suggestion in the Ra'ah that the separate consideration that even if you were to build a permanent wall in your own Rishus, your neighbor has a right to force you to build it halfway on, you know, half on his property, half on your property, and to split the costs, because he should have the rights to be so big and use the structure of the wall. Of course, from a Nezek point of view, as the Taz says, this is very difficult to swallow because you got rid of the Hezekriya problem. But maybe from a Shechenim Hatavas HaChatzer, Tikkun HaChatzer point of view, it could make sense. And then finally, we have the Rush's view contrasting Niskei Mamon Mechila with Hezekriya Mechila, where the latter is a pure, the Hezekriya Mechila is purely a monetary obligation that doesn't derive from Nezek, whereas the Niskei Mamon starts with Nezek, and that's why it's not subject to Mechila. Okay, guys, that's the overview of the Shechenim versus Nezek Chakira. Is this helpful today to just nail down these key makoros? Great. So for Tuesday, I want us to... did everybody read the Rabbi Lam article yet? So read the Rabbi Lam article. It's on Canvas. And, it's kind of a breezy article. It'll take you like maybe a half hour to read. And then I want to start... summarizing the key findings of the sugya, just to synthesize some of the basic material and the core different, like what are the main views here on Hezekriya and the type of wrongdoing that it is. And in the back of your mind, I just want you to think about the explanation that Ray Lam gives in his article versus like other types of explanations that might be adequate to explain the makoros. All right, guys, so let's assume we'll have like two more shiurim on Hezekriya. And then we're going to start the Mishnah on Dalet Amud Beis, Makif and Nikaf. So if you want to start looking at that, it's like about it's about an Amud. Do the Mishnah and the Gemara, and then just go into the next Mishnah and Hayman Aleph. I think it's a pretty quick read. But we'll spend some time on Makif and Nikaf coming up. All right, Shkayach, guys. Stay tuned for discussion about Tuesday's share.